What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Clock Radio Speakers. I'm your host, Armand. You can follow me on Twitter at Armand Wake Up, A-R-M-O-N-D, Wake Up, all one word. Do not follow me on Instagram, because if you come up to me showing me pictures of my children and what I had for dinner the other day, I'm going to think that you're weird. ClockRadioSpeakers.com is powered by Tumblr. So if you're on Tumblr, follow us there. Share the episodes, all that good stuff. We're also on iTunes. Subscribe to us in iTunes. Rate and comment, please. Rate and comment. The more you rate and the more you comment, the more that we get out there for the people. The slogan for Clock Radio Speakers is for the people, so we want more people to be there for. Official Twitter handle is at CRS Podcast. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/clockradiospeakers, and every Sunday night, 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. Eastern, thepulse-radio.com. We basically play whatever we want. So, yeah, I got some people with me. Who's in the house besides, you know,
regular old Doc?
What's pitted it up in? Full Sierra, aka the Raptors, represent A Omega Global Military, aka that Jesus set. Bang, 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 boom, Doc Saint Gang all day, every day.
I can't really follow that up, but this is Doc. Y'all follow me on Twitter at Doc_beats, S not a Z. yeah, that's funny, right?
Follow me on Twitter. I'm Doc.
Yeah, what's up? We got Lavoisier in the show. It's funny because I've been listening to his voice as I've been editing a certain song on Kairos. We just met online for the first time like 5 minutes ago, so it was good to actually talk to him. What's going on, man?
No doubt. Peace. Grace and peace, fam. How are you?
Good. So, Armand, what are we all doing here today?
Oh, man. We're here to address some issues, man. Do you want to address those issues first, or do you want to wait?
I think we should just get right into it, man.
Okay, I mean, why not? It's what the people came to see. Are they not entertained? Are you not entertained? Come on. It's what they came to see, man.
All right. Let's get into it then. So, boom. Was it about three weeks ago?
Right.
There's an artist. Dude's name is Jop, Kid Jop. Just out of nowhere, he put out a song called Letter to Lecrae.
Right.
Basically, the theme of the song is, I grew up on your music. You helped me out in my walk with God. And now that you are, as he described, as mainstream, you know, things are different. I'm not really hearing Jesus in your raps. You're watered down. You're more concerned with selling records. This, that, and the third. This is largely considered a diss song.
Right. Right. Which is an issue in and of itself, but we'll address that when we come to it. But go on.
Yes. So this is a diss record, and it's caused a lot of controversy. Rapzilla posted it up. Lot of controversy, a lot of comments. Really, would you say that they're split, or is it largely one sided?
You mean the responses?
Yeah, the response.
I don't know ratio and proportion wise. I know that what it revealed was that there is more dissatisfaction with what Lecrae is doing than I might have imagined. Yeah. That's what I'll say. I was like, okay, wow. Like, quite a few people not really feeling what he's on. And you can see by the way they're pumping up what he's doing.
Right. So, I think, you know, Voss and I had, the reason why Voss is on the show is because Voss and I had a really dope conversation last week. And we kind of, you know, we just felt the need that there were some things that needed to be addressed. And of course, what better platform than Clock Radio Speakers, where we've already kind of built a rapport with
that's one way to put it.
Right.
So, you know, we can just go ahead and bring that back to the forefront. Whoever wants to jump in first, Voss, what's your take on everything, man?
I mean, overall, it's a couple of things. Let's not forget that we're coming from a culture that is very, very sensitive. I mean, we are cut from the cloth of people who kill each other for stepping on each other's sneakers. So I don't know if we're a good reference point for what a diss or an actual insult is. I think anytime in our, like, you know, you see people from other cultures, sometimes they're on television arguing at the top of their lungs and they shake hands. Not that yelling at the top of your lungs is the way to debate, but it's just to make a point. Whereas in our culture, because of the level of sensitivity, there's like this, yeah, man, I wasn't really, you know, feeling what he did. Yo, son, why you diss me, nigga? I'm gonna, you know what I mean? And so it's like, is super turned up in that way. And so that I think needs to be taken into consideration. But I don't think it was a diss. I think he has the right to his opinion. I don't happen to agree with it, but I think he's entitled to it. I think no person should be above question. You know what I mean? You know?
Word.
For me, Doc, when I heard this, I was like, you know, congratulations, Lecrae, you've made it. Right? Mm. Because to me, this is the equivalent right. of like in the mid-90s, when the Jan Sports got extra tight and backpackers got real upset and they were all, you know, bad boys ruining hip hop and, you know.
Right, for sure.
Yeah. All that stuff. And, you know, it was, I mean, the song is not great. Let's start there, right?
He used Lecrae's beat, son. This. Ah,
the song's not great. The beat—I mean, no offense to Lecrae—the beat is not exactly what I would consider like, you know, great or anything. But the song's not great. Right. I don't know how you can call this a diss because dude is so polite about it. He's almost like he's like, listen, man. Like, I hope you don't take offense to this,
right?
But
no doubt.
I think maybe you're not exactly how you used to be. And then he like backs away from the mic. He's like, yo, I mean. Do you have a problem or do you not? There's really nothing like definitive. Like it feels very inside baseball to me. And what I mean by that is like you have to already feel or have heard people talk about this notion of Lecrae selling out to really like latch onto this. Mm. Like right. me hearing this, I'm like, okay, so he may prefer if Lecrae rapped a little differently. Like that was sort of my first right. response, you know? And
right.
I don't know. It seems like people are getting a little excited about, I don't know, not much.
Yeah, I think that with one thing that hip hop has done is it has not done well with accountability. Like, you know, subliminal diss records. Like if I offend you or if you offend me, I'm gonna tell you like, hey Doc, I didn't like the way that you did da 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 da.
Right,
no but joke. In hip hop, I'll subliminally throw a shot. I'll say, yo, you know, that's why, you know, my doctor's da 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 da. I'll say like something like a play on words or something to let you know that I'm kind of talking about you. But right. then when I'm asked or confronted about it, you know, whoever want to take it, interpret it, whatever the way they want to do. And
right.
that was very much so what I got from the song. Like, cause you're right, Doc, like he obviously said letter to Lecrae. So we know who he's talking about. But he didn't really, like, address... It was kind of like, yeah, I mean, you sort of... I mean, it could be maybe if you... Eh. And there's a difference between doing things in love and just being scared. And he sounded really, really scared on the song.
And, yo, let's keep it 50-1100. You know what I mean? Bizzle's my man, popular Christian rapper who got well-known for dissing Jay-Z and other rappers. Some people ask me, what's the difference? Well, you know, I think some critiques, man... My problem with a lot of critiques of a lot of public figures is... I try to stay away from the critiques that speak to motives because that's one thing you really can't know. Now, you can speak to actions. This is wrong because of this. But when you start saying, oh, yeah, he's doing that because this and why he wants to do this, I mean, you can't really know that. So you got to be really careful with that. When I look at what Bizzle did, I look at to this day, some people still think his name is Lavish because the dude put no links, no MySpace, no face, no linking back to himself. Right. I mean, hey, that could have been part of the ploy, right? I'm just trying to put it out there. This guy, by contrast, though, he just begins to act every popular rapper he could think of, asking, yo, have you heard my new song about Lecrae?
Right.
And I mean, are you warning the sheep from the wolf, or what are you trying to get? Because that's different. Okay, you know, because even in the Bible, Paul said, watch out for the Alexander the coppersmith. He did me much evil. Like, you don't trust that dude. You know what I mean? So right. there's a place for public critique and warning people, but I mean, yo, check out my new diss song to Lecrae. It's kind of lame. He added me, and I just before I knew, I was like, what? Man, whatever, man. And so I think, I don't know. I think, and then I challenged him on Twitter. He was like, you know, would Shy Lin do a song with Lil Wayne? Man, that was so corny to me, man. No disrespect. Shout out to the homie, but then he ain't my standard. Like, don't ask me. You know, you better come with what would Jesus do or else?
Right.
And I asked him. I said, yo, listen, man, who what made Shy Lin the standard? You know what I mean? And I began to ask him. I began to take him to task and say, because his thing seems to be, if I could name two things that it is, it's one, that Lecrae is not rapping as intensely religious. That's what I'll call it. Because let me tell you something, the book of Esther don't mention God. You got other books in the Bible that don't mention God at all.
Right.
So I have to conclude that the mention of God is what you're looking for. So in my mind, I equate that you're looking for more religious language, things that that sound more overt, so more overtly Christian, so that Lecrae's not using as much religious language and vernacular, and also that he's doing collabs with secular people, and so that's where that critique came from. Would Shylin do songs with Lil Wayne? Shylin's another Christian rapper who, for those who don't know, and I just felt like, man, if that's your standard, I see why you off. You're comparing it to the next man.
Yeah, this dude would hate me. Like, or he would severely, politely disapprove of everything we've done. Like,
right.
For sure.
What's interesting to me is this sort of, and Armand and I have talked about this on previous episodes, but like this sort of distinction between, like, to me, like when I do listen to Christian hip hop, or when I do sort of research for the shows that we have to talk about it, there's a distinction between, like, you can, there's like, there's this notion of preaching versus simply rapping about like a Christian life or a Christian worldview.
Right.
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 And,
right,
you know, Armand, I hope this is okay to say, and you don't take this the wrong way or anything, but to me, you are much more in the rapping about a Christian life or a Christian worldview.
Right.
Instead of, like, you know, outright preaching.
Right.
And I'm not saying, you know, look, I have my preferences, but I'm also not, you know, the target audience necessarily here. So I understand people, right, might have their preferences, but it seems to me, and from reading some of the comments at Rapzilla, which, as always, is a terrifying experience.
man, really, though.
You know, but yeah, look, it's not even just Rapzilla. Like, comments online in general. Actually, you know, compared to most places online, the Rapzilla comment section is upstanding citizenry, right?
Right. Like,
what's the worst? YouTube, Reddit? What's the worst place?
Oh, man, you know what it is? Actually, well, YouTube's a cesspool, but, like, go on to any major news site that talks about politics.
Yes.
It's whatever you believe or disbelieve, the comment section is just, it's every loon on all sides, like, is attracted to this, and it's just out of control.
Right.
Like, you can't even have a conversation about it. So, yeah, compared to that, I mean, look, it's nowhere near that, but... going back to what I was saying, to me, the reaction to this is very much more, I guess I wasn't, and this is maybe how sort of much of an outsider I am to what's going on here, but I guess I still don't realize just quite how, maybe not unusual, but still unorthodox it is to be rapping about the worldview instead of what I might call outright preaching. Is that accurate? Is that still sort of unusual?
No, I think, it's interesting. I think that because Reach Records came up under the previous, I don't know what you would call them. I was about to make up a joke that was in bad taste, so let me chill. came up under the previous regime, you know what I mean? Religious rapping. And my thing is always this. You can use hip-hop how you want. Teachers use hip-hop to teach class lessons. So, you know, you can use it how you want, but typically... Hip hop is not a teaching medium. It's a sharing medium. It's a conversational medium, and people learn by default. You know what I mean? When Foxy says 32 grams raw, chop and a half, get sick, she's just stunting and talking about what she do. Okay, you're deducing on the side, like, oh, wow, that's how drugs work. Okay, I understand. But so I think that whereas a lot of Christian rappers don't really realize that because we're believers, even when you go to church for a year, you get saved, what, 19, 20 years old, give your life to God, start going to church, start listening to sermons, you're programmed to listen to sit and listen to somebody talk to you for an hour or so once a week at least. And so the lecture format is pleasing to us. You know what I mean? It's almost like, well, we listen to people preach and lecture anyway. Now it's just music to it. The world doesn't consume music in that way. The world does not get their hardcore information, teaching, learning lessons from music in that way. And that's just always been my approach. So I just share what's in my heart and hope people learn by default as a rapper. And so I think they created that standard of, yo, listen, I'm just going to rap and teach in that way. And I think that that's why it doesn't go over as well sometimes with unbelievers, even though they tell you it's dope. You know, they'd be like, oh, yeah, that's hot. But I don't think that religious angle gets as much replay value as dudes who more rap down to earth worldview, Armands, Jafias, Dre Murray's, people like that.
Yep.
Pick on that, Armand?
I mean, I agree with him. I agree with Voss. I mean, there's definitely, when it comes to Christian hip hop, like right now, you're starting to see more artists. Like, it was really at one point, it was really taboo to rap about yourself and, you know, let me think, outside in. Like, there's a difference. Like,
interesting.
When,
well put.
When somebody looks at the world and then internalizes, this is what I see from the world, as opposed to Inside Out, where this is what's in me, and then, you know, this is what's in me first. I'm trying to convey a message, and it's almost like active versus reactive.
Right.
So for the most part, a lot of Christian hip hop, a lot of the early Christian hip hop that I got into, which was early Lecrae, early The Truth and all that stuff, when I first got put on, first got saved, like, it was on that, you know, turn to Roman 6, go exactly. get your sticks. Like, it was like that. And I was like, you know, I always come from the school where music is so important to me that I don't want to compromise. Music is important to me and God is important to me, so I don't want to compromise one for the other. Right. So I want you to be, you know what, if you rap about God, I want your music to be as dope as your, the way that you convey God, as dope as he is to you, make that dope in your music.
Really?
Just recently, I'll say, within the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, I always cite, like, you know, Ja'Fi was definitely the first guy. Ja'Fi's on the album, cheap plug. And, you know, like Hell's Paradise with Whit and Dre Murray, like, those are the ones where people were actually talking about, oh crap, this happened to me, this is how I responded to it, and my response wasn't correct.
Right, no doubt.
You know what I'm saying? Because before then, it was just like, you know, it was very roundabout, going back to my point about accountability. It was very like, yeah, I'm dealing with sin, but God is greater than my
sometimes
sin.
Sometimes I fall and all of that.
Kind yeah,
of.
Fall into what? Right. Like, you don't slip, like, you don't slip and fall into your sin or whatever. It starts in the mind. So if you thought about, if you slept with that girl, like, you didn't jump off a roof, slip and land inside of her. Like, you thought about it, you planned it out, you thought of the different ways that you wanted to do it, and you schemed and manipulated a way to make that situation present itself, really, and you did it.
No doubt.
So why aren't we talking about that? Because people are doing the whole how did I get here conversation, and it's like, you know how you got there.
Interesting. Yeah,
you know exactly how you got there. You planned that out, whether you want to believe it or not. So we're getting to that point now in hip-hop, in Christian hip-hop, where that's becoming more more of the rule rather than the exception.
Right.
And that's making a lot of people uncomfortable. I think that homie, and I think that a lot of people who are agreeing with him are very uncomfortable with themselves. The Christian culture in general, a lot of people are really uncomfortable with themselves. Yeah. Really awkward, really like, I don't know how to deal with, like, because they're walking around like, okay, is this okay? Can I do this? Can I laugh at this joke? Can I watch this show? They're serving God out of fear.
Now, why is that?
And the funny thing is, it's not even fear of God.
No,
it's fear of man.
Absolutely.
I didn't really know, you know, I've had my issues with people, because, you know, wherever you find God or with people, you find peopleness. It don't stop because it's church. But when social networks came around, there's a Christian network called Ill Spot. And that's when you got to kind of know people and see what they were.
That's what it was. I was thinking of the site that prefaced the South. It was
Ill Spot. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right, I was on that heavy, like a behemoth running through. But, you know, ask about me. But so I got to know a lot of people, and I would just begin to, I didn't feel like people were fake. I just felt like there's a side of people that the way they rap, you just would never even think that they're into that. Like one time, and you know who you are, brother. It's not an insult. It's just a point. So if you hear this and you know I'm talking about you, you could holler at me. You already know. But so I was talking about battle rapping. Right. And oh, shoot, I don't watch it like that. But I'm like, oh, this is dope. He's dope. He's dope. He's dope. So another Christian rapper calls me. He doesn't respond to me on Twitter or any social network. He calls me. He never talks about that kind of thing. And he calls me and he kind of wanted to have this private rendezvous of which ones he likes and which one's dope and who's dope. And do you know this? And I just felt like there was a real intentionalness about having this conversation behind the veil, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And he just wasn't really willing to have that kind of conversation in front of people for what they might think. And I don't think it's fake, because in his mind it could just be discretion. Like, I don't want to cause anyone to stumble, but I'm not with that, really, personally. Right. I'm more some, this is who I am. Maybe, you know, if there's an issue, maybe you can help me see that I shouldn't be looking at this or watching this or saying this. I'm always open, and I try not to walk in fear. I try to be who I am, walk lightly, of course. Like, you know, you don't say anything goes because I want to. But yeah, man, I'm just looking for general in life. I'm looking for people that are just down to earth, who they are all the time. And yeah, man.
Doc, does that answer your question as to why people kind of move in fear, why Christians move in fear like that?
A little bit.
Okay. Well, pardon me, I'm long winded, but listen, this is Clock Radio Speakers, baby. I'm probably only gonna get this once a year, so I'm going in.
No, that's not an issue.
Another thing is this, my brother, niggas is rapping for youth groups, really though. That's really what it is, because the guy in the street that listens to hip hop, or even the average hip hop consumer, he's not a gatekeeper. He's not the one inviting you to this fest and that fest and this whatever. The people who are the gatekeepers are, let's keep it real, the people who are putting money in people's pockets are the larger churches, mostly white, and even when they're black, they have a certain level of professionalism, not fully comfortable with the whole hip-hop swag. Pants got to be up to your neck, you know, they checking you out and all of that. And so I think a lot of people, when they're creating material, I think they're trying to express their true self, but almost like, I don't keep it real, I'm black, I talk different when I get around a whole room full of white people. That's just what it is, you know what I'm saying? And the true or professional white people, I would say. And I think that that's that kind of dynamic. It's like, I think rappers are trying to be on their best behavior because the people who they feel have the position to make decisions and invite them places and give them the yay or the nay, they want it safe. Yeah. And then you get on their social network and they talking all kind of crazy. And I'm like, is this the same guy? Yeah. So that's what I think. That's just one of my personal
now views. Is that because, you know, Christian hip hop being a part of the larger sort of, or at least being grouped with, if you look at things like Billboard or the Grammys, whatever, being grouped with this larger sort of subgenre of gospel music, which traditionally has a very different sense of this is how things are supposed to sound, this is how things are supposed to look. Is that sort of a part of the same concept where people are sort of trying to, be on your best behavior is an interesting way to put it, but to put on a front, I mean, really, to use a 90s term?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Because you don't just get from the internet to the Grammys. You have to go through certain Christian gatekeeper channels, whether they be media channels or church channels. You know what I mean? You know, Reach Records is got public cosigns from some of the most prominent preachers of our day. You know what I mean? And I think that, you know, I just personally think that that plays into it, because you don't, in the minds of people, that is, you don't get there without a certain accept, and it's almost a sellout. And it's like the way I talk about this often, the way I like to term it is like, you know, when I go to a citywide event, you know, I got the mayor sitting there and I got the gangbanger sitting there, and this happens. And I know, just being 100, I know that I can talk in a way that's more impressive to the mayor. I know I came to reach the gangbanger, but the mayor's there, and I can talk in a way that would be more pleasing to one and off-putting to the other. And for me personally, I always go with the gangbanger. You know what I'm saying? Because that's who I came here to get. But I still feel the pull, or you might see someone influential in the audience who may not be cut from your hip hop cloth, and you kind of feel like the pressure, do you want to make a good impression? I think that that's a microcosm of what's going on in the minds of these writers. Yeah. They want youth groups to invite them. They want to get in front of people. And hey, my thing is this, there's always probably like five high schools in your neighborhood that ain't never really heard of you if you really want to reach people.
Right. That's really interesting to me, because, you know, one of the overriding factors of this, of the explosion of hip hop into the mainstream culture in the 90s, was the desire of, I'll be 100%, was the desire of white suburban youth to emulate what they saw as a cool and sort of attractive lifestyle that was being represented on MTV and in records. Like, let's be honest, that was part of it, right?
Right.
But what it sounds like is that doesn't exist at all. That relationship between that started in the 90s between, and is a little different now, because we're sort of, you know, we're 15 years after the fact, 20 years after the fact, really.
Right.
But that sounds like that relationship between sort of, I'll just say white, but you could call it whatever you want, but between those two different cultures doesn't exist necessarily in this, we'll call it Christian music world. Is that accurate?
I would say so, just because you got to look at, people don't realize Snoop Dogg was the most feared man in America. In 1992, 1993, Deep Cover came on, and he was a little skinny, and he was pointing the little 22 at the screen. They were terrified.
Yeah, really.
Now he's in commercials dancing with old ladies, and he's you know, hocking Old Navy jeans.
Wait, didn't he do something for remember Hot Pockets? He did the commercial.
Yeah, Pocket Like It's Hot.
Right. Wow.
He just did that last year. So people don't realize that there's like sort of a transformation. Like, for what is the saying? Like, first, you know, first they fear you, then they
you know, first they hate you, then they love you, then they accept you, and then you win. Something like that.
Right. But, I'm familiar.
Yeah, there's a process. Like, they just want to jump in and just be cool with everybody and turn it into a us versus them thing. And it's not an us versus them thing at all. Like, I'm not here to bash you over the head and make you feel bad about your lifestyle. Like, I can just do what I do and present an opportunity. Like, the way I'll say it like this. The way that a lot of Christian artists, because you're right, Doc, it does bleed a lot into gospel and CCM, contemporary Christian. You said white people problems with guitars. Yeah, like that. that type of music is because we kind of like do what you know Reformed theology calls predestination. So we say, all right, well, You're going to go to heaven. You'll probably go. Pretty good chance you won't go. So I'm going to go and I'm going to target these people. And we do that with our music, with our culture and everything. And we usually target the people we perceive to be already on their way there so that it's easier as opposed to really going for the people who they may be in submit with their worldview. Like, you know what? This is what I think. This is what it is. You're not changing my mind. And that's it. They're going to hell. We're not even going to deal with them. We're going to deal with these people who are already there, and we're just going to lightly push them in the right direction as opposed to maybe you having to push a brick wall for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years in order for them to move an inch. It's just easier.
As you say that, it makes me think of a simple line, bro. Even if money is not the replace money with whatever you want, there's more money in pastoring than evangelism.
Yes,
because evangelism depends on the acceptance of those who don't feel your message already. Pastoring, you're dealing with people saying, yes, I want this. Teach me, help me, and I'll help support your lifestyle. Yep. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So it's harder to go. It's harder. I got a line where I say it's so easy to speak the truth in a room where everyone believes the same thing as you. Mm. So it's easy for me to go in a room and say, you know what, Tupac is the greatest, and everybody got bandanas tied in the front of, you know, to the front.
Right.
But if I go in a room full of bandanas and I say, yo, Biggie was the illest, I'm probably going to get beat up.
Right.
And that's where a lot of Christian artists want to avoid, but they don't realize when you look at the culture, everybody who's in the forefront did something different than everybody else.
Very true.
So even now, who's the number one dude? Who's the top three dudes in hip hop right now? We could say Drake, Kanye, and what? Kendrick, just not even including Jay and Nas and all that.
Right.
So like top three current dudes are Drake, Kanye, Kendrick. All three of those dudes have three distinct styles that were not previously in the market prior to them coming in. They ushered in something new. They presented a new idea for other people to grasp onto. They dealt with a lot of opposition. They still deal with a lot of opposition.
Yeah, very much so.
But for the most part, they're at a position where people have said, you know what? I like him because he does something different than everybody else that I listen to, and that's why I rock it. We need more of those. I think as an artist, if you can't do that as an artist, you're not an artist.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And you know what, man? I think, you know, it's just so funny switching to hip-hop, man. It's like, everybody we diss is the reason why hip hop is what it is. Like it or not, I'll name a couple. Will Smith, MC Hammer, Vanilla Ice, what's the other guy named? Young MC.
Yep.
The people that were selling millions and millions. Let me tell you something. Without those guys, you could pick any rapper that gets in this lane, but without MC Hammer and Vanilla Ice, the Slaughterhouse would not be able to make money today.
Yep.
Because it's those people who took it. Who commercialized it and took it a different way, that we were like, oh, that ain't real, son. That's crazy. So look what they wear, shiny suits and all that. Man, that's the reason why hip hop is as vibrant and a diverse culture as it is today. So it's just interesting what the core has to say about it versus the tastemakers and those who actually decide the future of it ultimately.
Yep.
So, sort of related to this, as I was doing, you know, research for this week's episode, you know, specifically My Letter to Lecrae and some of the stuff, some of what I guess what I would call, I don't want to say well, we can call it a Lecrae backlash. But so there's this article, Why Christians Should Have Lecrae's Back.
Mm-hmm. I saw that headline. I didn't read it, though.
It's really interesting because what it does is it basically draws comparisons between Lecrae and MGK. MGK, who's a white rapper, sure. he's signed to Diddy, who calls himself a Christian. But, you know, he's also rapping about, you know, all sorts of, we'll call it unsavory elements, right?
Love it.
And the author of this article is basically, he's basically saying, you guys should have Lecrae's back because he's a real Christian. Right? He's basically calling MGK not a Christian, which is bananas to me. Like, it was basically, who's a better Christian? Like, that was sort of the title of this real article. And I was like, all right.
Okay, now talk to me about that. Why is that concept of saying who's not a Christian? Now, of course, it gets funky. It's a slippery slope. But why is that such a wild idea to say, that guy's not a real Christian?
Well, I guess I would flip that around and say, what is the definition of what is a Christian?
Okay, here we go. We can say everybody else is not really something. When you say when someone's stealing money out the back, and I'm not talking about your mishaps and your falling shorts and your, hey, I'm not perfect kind of guy. I'm talking about your turn up, pull up, drink up, shoot up, smack up, like sex up. That's not a Christian. If a gangbanger's running every time there's a problem, we're going to say, yo, you ain't no gangbanger, homie. You're a sucker. Every sect, region, profession, vocation has guidelines of what. If you don't have no plaques on the wall, you're not a platinum artist. If you don't have a doctorate, then you're not a doctor. And so while it can get slippery, you can't see one guy in a funk catch a guy. Because I always say, a good Christian on a bad day look like a heathen. And a heathen on a great day look like a saint. So I'm not trying to say that you can just go around saying who ain't and who is for everybody. But there is a certain definitive standard when it's like when there's nothing about your life or what you say that even forget about acknowledging Christ that even reflects any idea of goodness or righteousness. The Bible says we will know them by their fruits. And if everything you have to say out of your mouth is negative, F that, niggas ain't nothing. That's just a person who cares nothing for Christ. And again, I'm not talking about a bad day, but we have a panorama of MGK's career for the past 2 years to see what he's about. Yeah. And none of it is righteousness. And so I wouldn't say that that's too far of a stretch.
Because to me, I sort of looked at it as, I mean, is it possible to self-identify as a Christian, even if you're struggling to do things in a righteous way?
Yeah, but you know what? But the guy that's robbing banks every day is not struggling. The guy that may have robbed a bank or has an addiction or is like accountable to somebody, like I'm trying to stop robbing. Every time I go in the store, I gotta, you know, there's a difference. But let's not act like the person. Here it is. The moment you glorify something, it is not a struggle. The moment you brag about it and you tout it and you flash it around town, when you steal someone's chain and you go on YouTube and you flashing it and you want to show it around the neighborhood, you're not struggling with thievery. You're a thief and you're proud. And so when we talk about people who are making music who are reveling in evil, we're not talking about imperfections. We're talking about people who say, yeah, I pull that kick though. Yeah, I'm hitting that lick, homie. You already know what it is. That's what it is, how we get down, nigga. Oh, props to my Lord and Savior. He's not your Lord and Savior, bro. Because the Bible, one scripture in Isaiah hit me when I was at a point of sin in my life. And he, God told the people, he said, you have forgotten how to blush. You are no longer embarrassed or remorseful about the things in your life that are deplorable or detestable. And that's how you know what is a struggle and what is not. When you glorify something like it's cool, it's not a struggle for you. And you have no interest. You're expressing no interest in changing anything.
See, I respect what you're saying, but isn't this a very slippery slope? Because, all right, yes. So if you establish that there is a certain threshold. All right. So now we got to go in the other direction. All right. So who's the greatest Christian of all? Right. You're leading yourself down that category where people are just.
Okay, so what's the question?
So I guess what I would say is why. So, but let me ask you this: would you agree that it's not that we don't want to sit here and get in a position of judging who is a better of who is a great Christian versus who is a good Christian?
No, exactly. I agree. Right.
So, if you don't want to get in that business, why is it okay to sort of have a litmus test on the bottom end of the scale?
I don't think it's just okay. I think it's definitive and necessary for the body of Christ. Because we're battling for truth. It's not just it's not just humans, God, and life. There's humans, God, life, and Satan. and an adversary. The Bible says he's walking around like a roaring lion, actively pursuing to devour believers and deceive them into of what the righteous life is about, and trying to get us to compromise and become complacent in our walk. So I think that there's a certain and again, most things in Scripture are slippery slopes, and I think that's where humility does come in. You know what I mean? And I, like I said, I don't think you should run around saying it for everyone, anyone, all the time, anytime you feel like it. But there does come a point when someone gets up on a stage and says, you know what? I love God. I love Jesus with all my heart. I love Allah too, and Buddha, and Krishna, and there are many paths. At that point, you are not a Christian, and I am going to stand up and say that, because you have the potential to hurt other people. That's the reason why I go at rappers. If you Google, before Bizzle got on, I was doing that. Google fake rappers. I got the first video that comes up. It got 600,000 views, and I've heard it back from industry folks. Debating MC Search on MySpace, saying, nah, shouldn't have been in the video because he's positive. You know, that was a whole nother thing. But the reason why I started to attack ideologies of rappers is because I'm really in the hood. I'm not in charge. I'm in neighborhoods working with kids, talking to kids, after school programs, penitentiaries, orphanages, and all that. And the barrier to getting truth into their heads are the mentalities of the rappers. I'm talking to a 15-year-old, and you could tell, like, wow, he's talking like Jeezy. This ain't even his own ideas. So it wasn't until I began to destroy those other worldviews in my music that began to be. And then let's not be unfair to the Christian. These dudes walk around saying, you lame, you ain't nothing, you ain't got no money, y'all some F niggas, you look at these F boys, y'all some suckers, y'all some squares, you ain't all of that. But then when I be like, oh, bro, you know, yo, what you're doing is harmful to the community. Yo, why you judging, fam? Man, listen. So they get to be disrespectful, vagrant, fat, say you kick my door down and rape my wife? Homie, I lay you out on my linoleum, blood. In Jesus' name. You don't get to terrorize the community because you don't know Christ. This ain't just about Christian and non-Christian. I'm in these neighborhoods. These guys are terrorists because, you know what's like Bizzle said, you rapping it to kids. The fatherlessness of black people, of young black men, causes them to look for heroes in a way that no other culture does. And in other cultures, you could be Marilyn Manson or you could be Mandy Moore. You could be Britney Spears or Mandy Moore. You got your choices. With us, all we got is thugs and killers and gangsters and rapists. Nobody knows that the CEO of Xerox is black. Nobody knows that the CEO of American Express is black. Nobody knows that the CEO of Olive Garden and Red Lobster is black. This stuff is not pushed. And so, personally speaking, I can't speak for every rapper that takes a stand, but I'm taking a stand against ideologies of poison, and I'll close this point with this. God loves everyone equally, loves everyone the same. You want a train platform. You see a thief. He's about to steal a woman's purse. We're not talking about pre-crime here. You see him in the act of stealing someone's purse, and he's about to push the old lady. She's not giving up the purse. God loves them both equally, as should you. But you have a duty to the victim. Your duty to each of those individuals, because of the circumstances, is different. Now, if they were both just standing on the platform doing nothing, I wouldn't walk up like, yo, you ain't a Christian and the old lady's better than you. But when I see you in a position of hurting another individual, another human citizen, another citizen of the world, so to speak, I have a duty and an obligation to help the person who is a victim. And because I'm in it, I ain't no church kid. It's another thing. Most of Christian hip hop is made by ex-church kids that rebelled for a couple years and came back. I'm not that. I'm G'd up still to this day. Straight up on blocks. On blocks, in projects, in hallways, busting them things off. So me, I am that. You can't sell that to me like I'm some the famous hip hop critic. I'm not Bill O'Reilly or Stanley Crouch. Homie, I know when I was a kid what you told me to do. I heard you tell me, Jay-Z, never fear no man, put four in his beam, drop your gun, then blow the scene. You heard? It's an instruction. You're setting a standard of how I should conduct myself when I'm in these streets. You're showing me how to move in a room full of vultures. So I know they're teachers and I know they're lecturers. So in that respect, now that I'm older, I'm like, homie, I don't like what you taught me and I don't like what you're doing to these kids out here. So I'm at you.
I would say that I assume for many of these rappers, especially the bigger they get,
right,
that the point, I would say that you may be right.
Okay.
But I would say that I don't believe that's their intention. And I'm not excusing that. I'm saying they're selling a persona.
Absolutely.
Right? And I would say that the desire, and you can draw this all the way back really to the explosion of Death Row Records and how that hit suburban America in the early 90s.
Right.
They are selling an image that they believe will make them a lot of money with probably very little regard for the message that they are actually sending to the people who are actually looking up to them.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree. When you jump in your car drunk and you just trying to get home and you kill three people, killing three people was not your intention, but the irresponsibility of putting yourself in that position and allowing yourself to cause so much harm, you should be held responsible to some extent. To some extent. So motive only gets people off, but so far. I mean, when you say, like, because that's what slave masters could say. Listen, man, you know what? Let's take look years. Yo, fam, I'm not no racist. You know, obviously, yo, fam, I'm not no racist. But yo, fam, I'm not no racist. I really believe black people are educated. You know what I mean? But I just can't let you go because my family's going to crumble. And now we have a moral dilemma. So, yeah, I know you're just selling records, but I'm telling you, or people are saying, there's harm. Let me tell you something. I got quotes, bro. I should have pulled them up before this interview. I didn't know what would go here.
I never know where we're going on this show.
Really, though.
That's the beauty of it.
I got some hip-hop quotables for that behind. Okay? Here we go. Right. Here we go. I'm looking for two quotes. One comes from Juicy J, and one comes from here we go. This is DJ Paul of 3-6 Mafia talking about SZA. Oh, Lil Wayne helped popularize it now, but 3-6 Mafia been rapping about drugs since 89. We did sipping on some SZA back in 2000, and I knew once the song blew up, it was gonna blow the drug up, cause that's how everything go. Interesting. Young Jeezy, XXL magazine, September 2008 says, I got all eyes on me. I got life after death. All that ish is real music to me. I got that ish. That means something to me in my era. I got that old cash money ish. I got that pride. That's a prize era in my time. Back then, you couldn't tell me ish. Them niggas had niggas wanting to go get a Rolex. So this is a grown man acknowledging that he was a hustler, a boss in his own right. Still admitting that the music even influenced him and what he was doing.
Sure.
Now, lastly, if I can find this last one, and I don't think it's here, it was just Rick Ross quoting, just saying, like, look, man, in XXL also, might have been on hiphop.com saying about comparisons to Biggie, he was saying, well, listen, man, when Biggie had the Coogee, you just be like, okay, what kind of sweat is that? Okay, I want to go get that. Okay, that's what's up. Yeah. Oh, what he smoking on? Garcia Vega? Okay, yeah, boom. When I see the Garcia Vega, I want to go get that. So as much as money is the first principle and they're not, quote unquote, trying to hurt anybody, there is an awareness. When you go on 106 and Park and the audience is 15, 16, 17, and you got daughters home that age, as most of these rappers do, and you say you ain't got to take your clothes off, you ain't got to take your panties off, just pull them to the side. And you're looking at 15, 16, 17-year-old girls on that 106 and Park stage, and they're singing along those lyrics. But that man is not culpable for that, that I shouldn't be able, as a member of my community, a real member, not some outside church kid that was never outside. I was on blocks. I'm a real member of the hip-hop community, not an outsider. I didn't watch it from my project window, so you mean to tell me that now I'm grown up and I don't got the right to critique? Nah, man, I'm on them. I'm at them.
No, you got a right to critique. I mean, first of all, I think we all agree 106 and Park should just be abolished. But that's a whole other. Watching that show, I'm afraid for the future of America. Watching that show sometimes. I think that's really interesting. You know, the one thing I would say to this, and I think this is just a difference in how people in different. I don't even say racist because it's not a race thing. In different cultures and socioeconomic classes, right?
Right.
Different, we'll just say groups' relationships to hip-hop is that, you know, I grew up with a bunch of, I mean, I grew up with all sorts of races because I live in all sorts of places, but,
right.
You know, there's a whole generation of white kids who grew up rapping along to every word from Big and Pac.
Right.
And for them, it meant something different.
Absolutely. That's what makes it worse. Because the majority of them came from the same place. The majority of them aren't white kids from the suburbs. They are dudes that grew up with little TVs with antennas, with hangers for antennas. Mm. But now you grow up and say, if you ain't got money, you ain't nothing. which is very telling into the psyche of what you thought you were growing up. But that's another Dr. Phil show.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And so that's kind of what makes it worse. Because you know what it means to, you know what our culture says when you go to school and your sneakers ain't fresh, that feeling you had as a child of not being adequate because our culture is so material. But yet, what do we do for the love of money? I say we, I was a secular rapper on my way to doing the same thing, trying to talk the same thing. I had evil devil raps. How about that? I had demonic raps about killing nuns and all kind of stuff. So I know what it is. And I didn't say, I want to poison the plant. I didn't have the maniacal laugh from The Incredibles or whatever, you know what I'm saying? So I do empathize with that. But again, here we go. I don't hate the thief, bro. I don't. But my obligation is to the person that the thief is robbing. And I feel like because it means something different, as you acknowledge, that's why my heart bleeds so much. Because these kids are not just going to listen and have a little bit of a rougher attitude. They're going to go outside and do this and go to jail.
Yeah, no, I agree completely with what you're saying. I totally understand.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, let me interject. Let me interject.
I was gonna say, Armand, what's your opinion on this? Because you've been quiet.
Y'all been going in. I'm chilling. I'm soaking in info. I want to speak to the point where, you know, like Voss, like you were saying, you had the evil raps or whatever. I had them too, but I didn't know. Like, I was mad ignorant. Yeah. Why did I say that stuff? Because I thought that was the cool thing to say. It was like,
yeah.
What can I say
right.
to make me appear to be the greatest rapper ever? Right. Oh, I know. I got enough game to steal Mary from Joseph. There we go. That's a dope line. I'm going to write that down. And when I'm performing at live shows, the beat is going to drop. And I'm going to say that line and the crowd is going to go crazy.
Right. That's a hard bar.
I think that, yeah, your thief point is 100% valid. And then when we bring it back to Machine Gun Kelly, like, I think that's the point that you and I were talking about last week. There's mad Christians and, like, no disciples.
Right.
Because that's where discipleship comes into play. Like,
right.
discipleship is the next step after the lady gets robbed by the thief. You grab the thief and you say, hey, dog, you stealing. That's wrong. Let's show you how you can. Do you need money? Let's show you how to get money in a logical way that is productive and that will contribute to our society, as opposed to just saying, you know what? You a thief. Get out of my face. So and that's what we think. Like, we often deal with extremes.
Right.
And those extremes are not wrong, because they're definitely possible and plausible, and they happen all the time.
Right.
But in the case of a Machine Gun Kelly, in the case of a lot of people, they grow up for years and they say, like, I'll say this. For me, I've been saved since 04. And I'd say within the last maybe 2 years is like the first 2 years where I really can sit up and say, I live a life where I intentionally try to please God. That doesn't mean that I do.
No doubt.
I wake up in the morning, I say, I want to please God with my lifestyle. Before then,
right.
I say
right.
Christian all day. I love Jesus. I do this. I do that. I was taking chicks home from Bible study.
Right.
All day, like, all right, what we doing on Wednesday? What you doing after Bible studies?
And
Bible,
you know,
study
what?
Get out at 8.
And you know what, bro? If somebody walked up in your church and said, "Yo, that's my sister," or "That's my daughter," and called you out and shamed you, they wouldn't be wrong.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That would have just been God choosing to deal with you publicly, not privately. But go
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely, because there's a because there gets to a point where God always wants sin to override, or always wants grace to override his judgment, which in itself is still grace.
Right.
But
amen.
Like,
amen.
So when you say, all right, you know what? Boom. I'm going to out you because you taking these chicks home after Bible study and you smashing them and you having you hide them in the back of your trunk while you sneaking on military bases, because at a certain time you can't have people off base and all that other stuff. I'm putting all your business out there now. Let's deal with the root of that. Why are you taking these chicks home?
I agree.
Why are you stealing this money? Why are you doing that? And I think that in the community, period, not just the Christian community, we need to talk more about that. Like, when you look at one thing that really bothers me is when somebody falls, quote unquote. Oh, my God, he fell. He fell. We fall every day. We wake up falling. So I don't get that idea that we've fallen. No. Y'all just found out what I did.
Right.
They
really
go into this chamber for like 6 months, a year. You don't hear anything about them. All of a sudden, they come out. They got a new haircut. They got a new single. They got a new everything. And they're like, look.
Called Revived or something, you know.
Yeah, I'm redeemed. I'm this. how did you get redeemed? Because there are people who do. The Bible says that there are people who are in the world who are doing that, are going through the exact same things that you're going through. That's why you go through things. Right. So if there are people in the world that are suffering, if it rains on the just and unjust, whether you're a believer or you're not, you're going to go through the same things that I go through.
For sure.
And I can walk you through those things.
For sure.
Not just I was a sinner, but now I'm redeemed. Like, there's a huge gap. How did you get from that process? How many times did you fall? How many times did you sit there on that train and you had to literally lock, like, hold your pocket because you wanted to steal that lady's purse? You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't talk about that process at all. And that is my burden. That's what bothers me. That's what drives my music. And that's what drives anything that I do, because it's just like, it's really easy for me to say, all right, I'm praying for you, or all right, you know, God will take care of that. How? What are you supposed to do while God is taking care of that? How are you supposed to handle yourself when you're going through something, you're dealing with something, and you have no idea, like, am I just supposed to, because it's just, you know, be still and know that I'm, so am I not supposed to go to work? Am I just supposed to stay in the
bed? Amen. Like, and you, like, and you know, Armand, rappers are people too. So I would never want to get to the point, like, I love what Steve, a great article, if anyone's listening. I think it was called, like, Lecrae, Rick Warren, somebody else, and us. That was really awesome, by the way. But I agree with that, but I do believe that even though rappers are people too, there's a dynamic that says when you start talking about, let's be like, you can tell me if I'm stretching the analogy a bit, as I can at times. I'm in a neighborhood. I'm in a drug rehab program. I'm sitting there with real people, not people who are rapping for a living and decide whether or not their pen, you know, who's going to make $100,000 at the stroke of their pen. I'm talking about real drug addicts, real drug dealers. Yep. When I talk to them, the rapper comes along and say, "Nigga, F that, get this money, man. Forget that." And I'm like, no, don't listen to that stupid guy. That's what I have to make that guy seem stupid to the practical person who I'm talking to in real tangible life.
Right.
And so that's kind of where I do agree. And I think that because when we say hip hop, we think rappers. We forget that hip hop is people. It's people who live in urban centers, millions of people who live in urban centers across the world who suffer in poverty. And there's a premium put on the soul of our entertainers. There's like a, with no thought of the people, that pop the Molly, I'm sweating, with no thought of the teenagers that are really going to pop a Molly, sweat, and never be the same.
Yeah.
From one night in the club, your song playing, million, you eating, you chilling, you smiling, you laughing. 15-year-old pop the Molly, mine ain't never right, can't go to college. Yeah. Multiply that times a million or whatever number you want. You know what I mean? And so I just try to, I feel like I'm bringing balance also and not putting a premium on the soul of the poisoner to his point. Like, okay, well, you don't just keep getting to get by because you're a sinner, because now you're, you know what else, you know what it's like? I got daughters. You know, if I love every sinner, but if a man gets into a truck and wants to come drive his truck into a school, again, there's an obligation to those who would be the victims of that person's actions. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know.
So first of all, Armand, I'm mad that we didn't talk about this before, because we could have definitely had a skit on Kairos called "New Haircut and a Single."
When we do the parody joint, let's just keep that
new hair. Yeah, I wrote that down. So I got a question. All right, so it sounds like, just to sort of sum up a little bit. So this, you know, bringing a full circle back to this notion, talk about MGK. So it sounds like it's possible for somebody to self-identify as a Christian, maybe even within the subgenre of Christian hip-hop, and we're not naming names, who may not truly be a Christian. Is that accurate?
Yes.
All right.
Right.
So to flip that, would you consider that there are artists, I hate to use the word secular artists.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah,
are there other artists who may not claim it, but are in fact Christian?
Yes, I believe it's possible. Yes. And that's why I'm really not being cliche and glib when I say, you know what? I'm not saying go around point out everything that everyone does all the time, because there really are people who are struggling. That they last 3-4 records been smashed, drug dealer, sex out bombs, and they really were struggling. Like, yo, I really didn't want to write that. You know what I mean? And so you don't always know, you know? And I think, and you know what else too, bro, I keep in mind? Jesus is both lion and lamb.
Right.
There is no personality that is always okay on default. Me, I'm aggressive, so God is always telling me to calm down. But I also know that God is speaking to docile, non-confrontation, them to speak up and say something, yes, and not always revert to their default personality. So I think that it goes hand in hand, that hopefully that as some of us land, stand up and roar, and maybe let's say a Bizzle comes at a rapper or something, for instance, or any rapper, any Christian rapper stands up and comes at a rapper, and then that rapper's offended, and he's talking to somebody whose personality is more like a sheep and is really a Christian. Like, yo, man, what's up? These Christians attacking me, man. And hopefully that sheep will gently and lovingly put their hand on their shoulder and say, dog, but you did say you kicked down his door and rape his wife and his mom's though.
Right.
And hopefully that lamb-lion dynamic will work together so that the person will understand that gentleness, grace, and chastisement are all part of God, that it won't just be this one. Christians are always yelling at me. Christians are always yelling at me. And I just hope by God's grace and sovereignty that they will all work together.
Yep.
So, Armand, you would agree the same thing that sort of just as it's possible to have a quote-unquote Christian artist who's possibly not truthfully living a Christian life.
Absolutely.
That there would be artists who may in fact be living a Christian life, but sort of don't label themselves that way.
Absolutely. And I think that has a lot to do with the Christian culture and the black eye that it has, you know?
Right. No doubt.
Because, you know, it's in two ways. It goes both ways. On one hand, you know, it's never going to be cool to be a Christian. You're never, you know, Jesus said that they're going to hate you because they hate me. So
right,
that
really
dynamic. Also, the way that a lot of Christians carry themselves, like people, like there's a standard. There's honor amongst thieves. No women, no kids. You know what I'm saying? So even when you deal on one side, like you'll still deal with people who say, for example, if I'm a promoter and I have said, yo, Voss, I want to have you come out to the show. Doc, can you DJ for him? I'll pay you guys both $1,000 each.
Right.
So, but when you get to the show, you know, he might be short on the money. He might say, look, I don't have $1,000, but I have $800 for both of y'all. Is that cool? If not, I understand. If y'all don't want to perform, da da da. This is not every case scenario. I'm just using an example.
Right.
So you say, all right, cool. You know, you're just $200 short. All right, cool. I'll do it. Or if you say, you know what? Now I want all my money. If you're not doing it, I'm not performing. They say, fine. That's cool.
Right.
On the flip side, you get like a Christian promoter or something like that who could possibly say, all right, I'm gonna pay y'all $1,000 each to come out. You get there and your hotel's not booked. And the venue wasn't promoted, nobody's there, and he doesn't have your money, but he wants you to perform anyway, and he wants you to grace him, like, grace me, so when you think of an example like that, or when you think of examples of people who kind of hide behind the veil of God to like do their dirt, and they know that they're not right, like,
no doubt,
it's not cool to be a Christian, because in the community, whether it be from experiences in bad churches, being deceived and lied to, getting your money taken from you, all these different things that people have done in the name of Jesus.
Right.
It's not cool to be a Christian. So I wouldn't be surprised. You can hear it. When I talked about Big Crit's verse on Gravity on Mayday, you can tell he has God rooted in him. He may profess to be a Christian, and a lot of the stuff that he raps about may be anti that, but you can tell that there's a seed there, and he may not want to cross over to that other side. I think No Malice was like that originally, wasn't he, Voss?
Right.
Where No Malice, or Malice from the Clips, like, he got saved, and he didn't do anything for like a year and a half, and people were like, he got saved on Monday, and Cass was hitting him up on Tuesday and Wednesday, like, yo, so when is your Christian album coming out? And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. Are you serious?
Right.
It took him a long time to finally get to a point to say, you know what, I'm comfortable with this, with taking this avenue and doing this to reflect the ideology that I want to reflect, which is God.
Right.
So Yeah, I do think that there are artists who are struggling. I think there are artists who are Christian and live a certain lifestyle and just don't want to say I'm a Christian, whether it be because they're scared, for financial reasons, for career reasons, or just the fact that they're ashamed of the people. You know, Gandhi said, you know, I love Christ, I don't like your Christians. You know what I'm saying? So I think they both exist, absolutely.
So right. The reason why I brought this up is because it seems that the most obvious person to talk about in this case would be Kendrick Lamar. To me, Good Kid, M.A.A.d City is probably the most effective Christian hip-hop album I've ever heard in my life.
Pew, pew.
Negative.
So it essentially tells the story of a kid who is living in a world where he is making terrible decisions. It is the most high-profile album I can possibly ever remember that sort of, you think of the climax of the story, it is when these kids get saved.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't hear anybody talking about that in as sort of being a Christian album.
Now, again, here's why I half agree with you.
Okay.
I am so in love with artists like Kendrick Lamar and Big Crit, because sometimes that's all I be asking for, just like personally, I mean, as a fan, not even as some, you know, Christian authority, like even as a fan, as a Christian who really loves real people and real rappers, I'm like, man, like these guys let the veil down and they do talk about their struggles and their humanness. I don't even be needing righteousness, man, but don't need just the same falseness of I'm Christian, super holy all the time. I think I'm a G. Don't sell me. Like I'm on the Ave with my daughter, homie, at McDonald's across the street from the Magic Johnson movie theater, and a dude I snuffed sees me with my daughter, and he like, yeah, what up? 5, 6, 7 years later, bro, he ready to get it popping. He's like, ish don't change, huh? Looking at me, knowing I don't want it, and I don't. Gangsta's not so convenient there. And that would have been the case even if I wasn't a Christian. And so I don't like the whole, like, hey, I'm gangsta all the time, nothing ever. And so I'm in love with these artists who let the veil down and show you their human side. And hey, listen, usually I'm drug free, but hey, I'm with the homies. Now, when you start talking about it's an effective Christian album or Christian hip hop album, I would say it's a not as negative album that mentions God. Because when you say all my life I want money and power, respect my mind or die from lead showers, I pray my D-I-C-K get big as you know what I mean? Like when you start and I'm not talking about the profanity, I'm talking about the mentality.
No, I agree, but that's the whole point, is that that whole album is a story, and that's the point in the story at which he is acting out, he is trying to impress his friends, right?
When you
listen to the entire context of the album, you get all the way, you know, second to last, third to last song.
Right.
And the consequences of his actions.
Right. Right? Sing about me.
Sing about me. Right. Right. I'm dying of thirst.
Right. Right. Right.
To me, that is a, you know, if you're thinking about like how do you make music that tries to, I don't want to use the word humanize, because that's the wrong word, but how do you make music that effectively displays the struggle and a cause for why you might want to do this in your life. I can't think of, and again, I'm not, you know.
I think that there are Christian hip hop albums that do that, but I think Kendrick's album, the reason why I love it so much is that it's a great tool to usher in discipleship, as I said earlier. Like, so after he gets saved, the next song is what? Compton? So he goes, he meets Dre, and then he gets a record
deal. It's real. And then, you know, but then, yeah, it's Compton.
But then the next song, he loved Bad Bees. That's his effing problem.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like,
I'm
that's
not talking
where,
Kendrick Lamar the person. I'm talking this album.
But no. But we don't do that. We don't separate personas. You know what I mean? If we separated personas from music, Ja Rule would still have a career.
we definitely separate personas from music.
Yeah, we separate. I believe we separate personas. I don't think it's right. I think that you can't do the 14 tracks of Murder, Death, Killing at the end of the album. You got your Jesus record. You know what I'm saying? Like you can't do that.
And Kendrick is nothing like that. Like I said, it's one of the most enjoyable hip hop, secular hip hop albums for me. in years. So yeah,
right. So that's where discipleship comes in, where you sit down and you two listen to that album. Like, that's not the end all be all. To me, that's a seed, as opposed to it being. A lot of people look at it as like the end. So that's what happens when you get saved. You get, if you're a rapper and you get saved, you get a record deal. No.
Right.
You get saved, and now you're coming to me and you're saying, "Yo, Armand, I heard this Kendrick Lamar album. Now I got some questions." And that's when you come in and you say, "Okay, boom, this, that, and the third," and you separate. You know what? This is right, but he got that other song called "Effing Problems."
Right.
He got
okay.
the other joint. You okay. know where he's talking about this, that, and the third. Nah, like that's not cool. Like you can't. In this case, it's kind of like don't shoot the messenger, almost, but kind of, sort of,
right,
because you can
right.
take the idea and you can say the idea is correct, but the idea that the brain that the idea came from, don't worship that. Let's focus on the idea itself.
And I agree with that, because I use secular songs in ministry. So in that respect, I do agree. I guess I just thought what Doc was saying was that, see, like I say, you, like when you say effective Christian hip hop album, I'm like, you know, that just kind of made me feel like, well, once you call yourself that, you kind of, you know, he didn't call himself that, but there's a standard set, though, of what is right and wrong. And I mean, once a person is exalted as a standard of what's right and wrong, I mean, it just gets tricky, because that same kid who hears that and that seed is planted, he can in turn use that next song as an excuse and say, absolutely. Well, like, you know, yeah, I like, yo, that's just my problem right now. You know what I'm saying?
He can go back and just listen to Backseat. Why do I always call it Backstreet Freestyle? He can go back and listen to Backseat Freestyle, and he doesn't realize that on track 4, he wasn't nowhere near God. He wasn't nowhere near track 12.
Right.
But he's on track 4, and you're like, you know what? I'm just dealing with track 4 right now. This is where I am. You know what I'm saying?
I understand.
So,
and when I said effective, I guess what I should have meant is effective from a point of being evangelical in a way, right? Sort of like reaching. If that is sort of your point, if that is your goal,
and let me tell you what I will say, and siding with both of you guys, I think more Christian rappers need to make music like Kendrick.
That was not the point I was getting to. Yeah,
right. So then I think we're saying not saying what he say per se, but I mean the way he documents and shares, and 100. Yep.
So there's a record on Kairos called Walking Contradictions.
Oh God!
Right, and when you talked about, you know, Lavoisier, you were talking about artists like Crit who sort of let that veil down, and
right
there's a great example of that on this record, right? Where, you know, it's funny, that second verse, Armand, I'm telling you, like, you know, you rapping about, you know,
I mean, it came from a real place, because every song on that album, that whole stretch was a period in my life that was like dark, where, you know, on the second verse, I did have an exact, because I talked about it later on Catch Up Too, where on record pools, like I really like to like pull from different, like record pools is related to Walking Contradiction, which is related to So Help Me God. I like to reference songs from different years past to kind of show the audience, hey, look, this is where I was when this happened, this is what happened now. So on Walking Contradiction, yeah, I talked about when my daughter came and visited me for the summer and she left, and I would hear her voice in the living room, and I'd hear SpongeBob one, and I'd wake up and I'd run in the living room like Troy off of Crooklyn, and she wouldn't be there. And I remember being on the phone with my girlfriend and having an anxiety attack, because I'm like, where's my daughter? Where's my child? I don't know where she is. Like, I remember having a conversation with the girl saying, look, I'm having these issues right now. You know, I just need an ear. And you come over and you want to have sex with me. I remember that. And I wrote about it. You know what I'm saying? So I think what the problem is that people just, a lot of Christian, we can say artists period, but since we're talking about Christian hip hop, like a lot of them don't want to go there because they don't want to be identified by their sin. They don't want to get pigeonholed like, oh, he's the sin rapper, where all he talks about is, you know, that. But I think that as an artist, I'm going to close my point and say this, and I've said it on previous episodes, you have to be responsible with your transparency, because even in that, I can glorify it. I can say, yeah, I got, you know, shorty came over my house and she was da 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 da.
Right. And then, like, and then I can, you can glory more in being real about it and kind of give yourself a pass. I've been there.
Yep. And I've done that a million times. But you have to be responsible, and you have to say, you know what? I've been there. And any day of the week until the day I die, I can be right back in that position at the drop of a hat.
Really though.
And that's what we need. Like, you know what? I serve God. I love God, but he's God. I'm not. Nowhere near it. And right. I can give you a million and one reasons as to why I'm not and why I never will be. And right. and people need to find comfort in that.
Right, no doubt.
There's comfort in that. Like, yo, I don't have to have it together. I don't right. have to put all my ducks in order. I'm trying to. But in my trying to, I'm going to make mistakes every day. I'm never going to reach an apex, a Jesus apex, where I'm floating on oceans and I'm right. doing all this. That'll
I just had,
never
I just
happen.
Had the image you, like, you know, Air Jesus instead of Air Jordan, right? You got,
yeah.
you know,
oh gosh.
You jump across the back.
With the air bubbles on the sandals. Yeah, no doubt. So, but, and that's what we need to get to. But I believe, I have hope. I'm not really into bashing Christian hip hop like I used to, but I think we're getting right. there. I think we're getting there. I give it another year or two. We're gonna be at a place where people are going to be able to effectively communicate the gospel in a way that is tangible.
Right, no doubt, no doubt. Yo, man, how much more time we got?
We're still going.
Oh, we whatever.
Oh,
it's our show, son.
Okay, I got to go get my youngest some pizza in a minute. But yo, man. Okay. Just for some background, because I know you know me a little bit, Armand, Doc, you know me less, Christian Hip Hop knows me. I know you guys got files that know the Lord. My story is, man, my mom's died when I was 4. You know what I mean? My pops was a drug addict, dope fiend, grew up in Brooklyn, New York. You know what I'm saying? Farragut, Fort Greene Projects, where I was born. 7 years old, I moved to Coney Island. So that's like South Brooklyn. Raised by my sister, you know what I'm saying? Dropped out of college to take care of me and all that. And not having a father, you know, that's went outside and do what the kids without fathers did. Start hustling, join the gang, start selling crack and all that. And my man came to me one day, one of my rhyme partners. I've been, you know, been spitting since I was a shorty. So my man tells me, yo, son, we got to rap for God. Now, we was exploring, messing with new age ideas or whatever. Now, my man came to me, tell me this. I'm like, yo, so you bugging? I'm smoking weed with him right there. He talking about God. We in a dope house on 36th Street and Neptune Avenue. Look it up on Google Earth. It's a real place. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, nah, son, you bugging. But there was a real conviction in my heart. When God speaks, there's a real pricking. You know, sometimes your mouth say something different and your feet don't always do what they're supposed to do. But I was pricked in my heart, man. And right there, when my man left, I walked him outside, came back in, and I said, God, I got down on my knees on a dirty carpet. It was an abandoned apartment we used to count the work up at. I said, yo, God, I don't know if you're real, and I don't know your name. I don't know who you are, and I don't know if you're real. But if you're listening and you're really there, like, I really need you to show me something. And it wasn't this arrogant, like, yo, if you there, show me something. It was a real sincere cry of my heart. Like, man, like, if there's a God who's willing to be there for me, heal me, comfort me, be with me, walk me through, heal me from all these from all this scar tissue I got from all the things I've been through in life, I really want to know. And God met me, fam. God met me on 36th Street in Neptune and Coney Island. And for weeks, if not months, I think it was shorter than that, I started reading the Bible, started carrying a little Gideon Bible. My sister was a CO, correction officer. So even though we wasn't churchified, she just had these little Bibles all around the crib that they used to get at the inmates. I just started reading the book of Proverbs. And it was just so clear to me. It was just such wisdom that I began to feel like either this book is the greatest trick that man ever wrote to dupe people, or either it's the greatest truth that I've ever encountered in my life. And fam, I used to go on my little hustle breaks. I used to count up my dimes, count up my crack, roll my weed, light it up, and read the Bible. So I know better than anybody that God takes you really where you are. And the more you know, the more you're accountable for. So I would encourage anybody that's listening, whether you feel yay or nay, whether you like this artist or don't, if you don't have a relationship with God, if you're struggling, you atheist, agnostic, or whatever, if you're looking, God can speak for himself. Don't let me talk you into it. I'm just a witness sharing what it was like for me. Because if I persuade you, then somebody else could come and talk you out of it. God is able to speak to you for himself. It don't matter if you're on the toilet or in the shower. If you want to know if God is right about what Armand, Doc, and Voss said, because we could be wrong about everything we said tonight, but God can speak to you for himself and let you know who he is. And that's my story. My name is Lavoisier.
All right.
And with that,
I think Lavoisier, it sounded like you need to get going. You got some life things to take care of, but
yeah, Little Caesars, pizza.
Hey, tell the people where they can find you and where they can learn more about you.
Yo, check out growtheheckup.com. You already know what it is. What's poppin'? It's Lavoisier. I'm here, baby. clock radio speakers. You know what I mean? Google fake rappers too. Check out that video I did that caused all the hoopla and whatnot. You know what I mean?
Out. Yeah,
yeah. My new single, I got a new single with Bizzles called "Do This Every Day." It's off of EP, a full project I got coming out early summer. It's called "Breaking Bread." I got some crazy, crazy artwork and done by a renowned hip hop artist. I don't even want to give too much away, but it's coming soon. So you can catch me at growtheheckup.com, and I'm here, man. It's the Rap Terrors.
What's your Twitter?
Oh, my Twitter L A V O I S I E R Lavoisier _ G T H U. Grow the Heck Up. So it's Lavoisier _ GTHU, or you could go to the Grow the Heck Up Twitter, at Grow the Heck Up, and that'll kind of lead you everywhere. Everything connects back to everything.
Word. All right, man. Well, yo, we definitely appreciate you having on the show. This is probably one of the best conversations we've had. So,
oh, this is one of the best interviews I've ever done. This is no. Man, listen, make sure y'all guys have me back in the future.
We got you.
Yeah.
Go ahead and take care of the life thing, and yeah. We'll catch up.
Yo, Doc, listen, it was a pleasure meeting you, my G. I hope we get to connect and have some more good debates, man.
Yeah, man. Anytime.
All right. God bless y'all. Peace.
Yeah.
All right, man. So, we still going?
Yeah, we still go.
All right. So, that was a good conversation, man.
That was a great conversation.
I hope everybody appreciated that. Yeah, that was interesting. All right, we still got some more things to talk about, man.
We do.
We got some regular just clock radio speakers style things to talk about.
Some speakery.
Speakery. So, you've been watching NBA?
Of course. Man, the Clippers look good. Golden State looks good, even with David Lee. I'm not going to say OKC looks good because they're playing Houston.
They look good, though. I mean, I didn't think Houston could really give them that much of a run. It'd be interesting to see, you know, I hope just for like a good show, I'd like to see, you know, James Harden get hot.
Yes.
Because if he doesn't, they're in trouble.
Right? Absolutely. What did he do game one?
It was like 20 points, but he struggled. It was a struggle 20. Like he jacked up a lot of shots, like. Not an efficient game.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Knicks look good, but that's, I think, the Celtics just look terrible.
Yeah, they're out of it.
They can't score. Their offense essentially appears to be they're going to have Paul Pierce do a bad 2009 Carmelo Anthony impersonation.
Wheelchair Paulie.
Right, he just dribbles down. It's just like it's ISO Paul. Never mind ISO Joe. Like, they look like they're in trouble.
Well, as we speak right now, it's halftime and Houston's only down two.
Okay,
so
we'll see.
Let's see some adjustments. Who else?
You know, the Heat. That looks pretty predictable.
Yeah, But shout out to the Bucks because they are not playing scared.
They're not. I think game two was one of those games where they had to sort of be like, oh, okay, we actually have to try.
Yes.
You know, I'm not surprised to see that. So I would imagine the Heat will definitely be up for game three.
Yeah.
They got their attention. They said, okay,
do you think they're sweeping or are they going to get in five?
You know, the guards on... Well, specifically Monte. You know, Monte is always a threat to have the... You expect that of the series. He's going to have the one game where he really goes off.
Yeah.
And if that happens, you know, who knows? Especially if he happens to go off, say, game three or game four. Well, actually, at this point, he'd have to go off in either game three or game four. a sweep is possible. It's either four or five. They're not getting any further than that.
Yeah. But for Miami's benefit, they need to sweep.
Who they face in second round? It'll be the winner of the Chicago series.
Yeah.
Well, Chicago won, so that series is going at least five.
Yeah.
That'll
go six.
So then they don't need to sweep them.
But it would be nice for them if they did. It would be nice for them if they did sweep.
You know, that's interesting. I would normally agree with you, but I think that there are situations where you want to have some days off, but you don't want to have too many days off.
Right. I agree.
You know, because then you know.
They'll get you, your rhythm will be off and all that good stuff. I agree. But I don't think that, I'm not going to say that doesn't apply to Miami, but I think that I'm going to go ahead and say that Chicago is going to win that series.
Oh, that's interesting. You think Chicago is going to win?
Yeah, I think they are. I think Chicago is six.
Did you see? I mean, you saw Noah dragging his leg around. Like he's in bad shape.
Yeah. Okay. But I don't like. I think he's a bum. So whatever. Bum Kim Noah.
He's the best player they got right now.
Well, I would say that the player, I would almost say that Nate Robinson is the best player that they
have. That's it. This podcast is over.
Only because when he's on the floor, he makes a difference. And that's just because I think I just have a beef with short, quick, crafty, funky basketball players, because I don't like J.J. Barea either. Any short guard who does a bunch of stuff and then they just throw the ball in the air and it goes in, for me being playing as a bitch in my career.
Felton was the master of that.
Raymond Felton.
He was just like driving the lane, like the most awkward looking shots.
Dog, Raymond Felton is the funniest basketball player to watch ever. People make fun of JaVale McGee. I love JaVale. I think he's dope. I think his basketball IQ has grown light years between this season and last year. He's not making nearly as many boneheaded plays as he did last year. But Raymond Felton is hilarious to watch. He'll do like a crazy play. He'll anticipate a pass. He'll steal it. And then he'll get the ball. He'll dribble twice. He'll get ready for a layup, and he'll bounce the ball off his foot and it'll go out of bounds. And then he'll tumble over into the crowd. It's the funniest thing ever.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, what other teams are we missing? The Hawks-Pacers series looks...
Nobody cares. Did we talk Lakers-Spurs?
Man, So, is this really how Dwight Howard's going to go out? Like...
Nah, I mean... What? His fifth child by fifth baby mama?
Nah, I mean...
Shout out to this girl. This girl's
cool. Can he not? I mean, he must be. You want to know how you know he's not 100%? Because he's not physically dominating Tim Duncan.
Absolutely.
Tim Duncan's a legend, but Tim Duncan is old compared to Dwight Howard.
He has to wear a t-shirt brace.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, people were, you know, this is the sort of series where you would hope. Yes, I know they don't have Kobe. Their guards are in terrible shape. You would hope that between Gasol and Howard, they could just go down low.
Yeah.
Over and over.
But they've got Paul. They've got Gasol playing high. They've got him playing out. Like, they've got him passing to Dwight.
Well, he's a good passer, but...
He is.
But, yeah, I mean, you want to talk about why, D'Antoni shouldn't coach that team. How long it take him to realize, hey, I've got Pau Gasol. Possibly the most... One of the most skilled big men in the league over the last 10 years. Right?
Now we want to acknowledge that. I'm not saying that you never did, but now we want to acknowledge that when everybody would trade Paul, he's soft, he's da da da. No. Paul has always been efficient, always.
He might not, you know, if he's your number one, you might not win a title. If he's your number two, you're in fantastic shape.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, why aren't they just having Blake or Nash take the ball up and just have both of them post up?
Yeah, I got lots of questions. I mean, at some point we're going to stop pretending that D'Antoni is a great coach, right?
Who acknowledges him as a good coach?
Teams keep hiring him.
Yeah. What did you think about Brown going back to Cleveland?
You know what? I think that's interesting. I think he's good for Cleveland.
I think he is too.
He wants to be there, and that team needs defense. My goodness. Mm. Kyrie Irving does not know how to play defense at all.
Neither does Deion Waiters. None of them do.
Well, I could have told you. But I think when Deion, I watched Deion in the Big East. I could have told you that. I mean, I don't think it's any accident. Actually, someone should look this up. High-profile players from Syracuse, they play zone. Whenever they're in college, they're not really playing, lockdown defense. I don't think it's an accident Carmelo doesn't play defense. It's not an accident Deion Waiters. Like, look at these dudes from Syracuse. I'd be real concerned about their defense.
Where's McNamara?
He's coaching.
Okay. I hated him.
We all did.
God. But I totally agree with you.
Yeah, totally he's good for Cleveland. I think they're not contending for a title right now. Like, I don't think he can coach a team to a title, maybe, but he's, for a young team who's trying to make the playoffs, perfect.
That's what I'm saying. Like, people, Mike Brown was the scapegoat when it should have been Comic Sans Gilbert.
You can blame LeBron for asking and then getting everything he ever wanted, and you can blame the power structure in Cleveland for giving him everything he ever wanted. Mm-hmm. Like, there was no balance on both sides. LeBron is a totally different person now.
Right. But you got to think about it. Mike Brown is not a bad coach. He's just coached two of the greatest players to ever play the game of basketball. Now I want to see him with a young team who he can pretty much control and maneuver however he wants. The biggest ego on the team is going to be who? Kyrie, if he has one? I think that's a lot more manageable than Kobe and LeBron.
Sure.
So I'm not, even though, you know, it's fun to slander Mike Brown. It's fun. But I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt this year, and I'm gonna hope, because I liked watching Cleveland this year. They just missed they were missing a few pieces, and I think Mike Brown can help with those pieces.
So speaking of your man Kobe.
Yeah. We got out of playoffs, right?
Yeah, we'll go with playoffs for now. I mean, it's still early. It's only a couple games in. You mean Kobe has been taking to Twitter. He's been offering up his opinions.
Yeah.
Which are hilarious.
Hilarious. That's one of the few celebrities that I follow.
I don't need to follow him because people retweet him.
Right.
He's on that status. And I think the really interesting thing about Kobe and Twitter is, the more we get a glimpse into his personality, yes, I think people are sort of warming up to it and they think it's funny, but I'm telling you right now, you can already tell he's tried to mimic Jordan's career as much as possible, and much like Jordan, he is going to have a hard time retiring and then figuring out what the heck to do after retirement.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to play. Like, his self-image is Kobe Bryant, the basketball player.
Right.
Not Kobe Bryant, the dude, Kobe Bryant, the father. Like, those are roles, but he is Kobe Bryant, a basketball player.
Yep.
Right? He is going to struggle.
Yeah, I think his tweets, if anything, has said that he obviously, there's a role for him to coach. I don't know if he can coach.
Oh, my. No.
I don't know if he can coach from a, I don't want to call it a humanistic, from maybe a personality standpoint. But I think as far as his knowledge, like, what does he do with all that basketball knowledge that he's accumulated over his 30-some-odd years of his life? Like, what, he can't just sit on that. He's got to do something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not of the school of thought that thinks that just because a player's really smart when it comes to basketball on the court means it translates well after the fact. There are some cases where, yes, it translates. Jerry West, right? He is the logo. Like, the NBA logo is drawn after Jerry West, right? Because he was an incredible player. And then he became an incredible GM, right? But then for every Jerry West, you've got Isaiah Thomas, who was a pure point guard and understood the game. And this, I'm biased because I used to play point. Like, only a point guard can. Right?
Yep.
And he was a disaster as a GM. Disaster.
One of the worst ever.
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 Who did he try to pair Eddie Curry with? Grizzly Z-Bo. Yeah. Right? He had Z-Bo and overweight Eddie Curry on some, like, throwback Twin Towers type. Like,
was he a part of the regime that threw all that money at Marcus Camby? Or not Marcus Camby, Allen Houston?
No, that was the previous regime. That was funny. The Allen Houston contract. Oh my goodness.
That was hilarious.
But yeah, I mean, so do you think Kobe on Twitter is a good thing?
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. I think it has helped with his image. Because Kobe has long been the silent basketball. Nobody really knows anything about him. I mean, Jesus, like, Spike Lee did the movie on him, the Kobe doing work, and all it was him playing basketball and talking about what he does while he's playing basketball. So there's no, in this information age where people don't just want to know, you know, what you do, they want to know who you are. Now Kobe is able to kind of ease into that after, you know, 15 years of being in the spotlight. and he's able to take advantage and pretty much give a humanistic spin. Like when he ranted after he tore his Achilles on Facebook, like people applauded him for that. When if any of us would have done that, it would have been like, pull your skirt down.
Well, that's because he's, you know, he's applauded for being a psychopath.
Mm.
Much like Jordan was. And look, Jordan was my childhood sports hero. All right.
Jordan would have floundered in this era of social media.
Well, he's just from an older school, right? I think that's the mistake Tiger Woods has made in his career is his model in terms of how to be a successful athlete has always clearly been Michael Jordan.
Yep.
Don't say anything controversial.
Yep.
Don't, you know, you're a pitchman, you're going to go out and you're going to dominate, you're going to, you know, but you don't have opinions on stuff, none of that stuff, right? That was always his mantra.
Yeah.
You know, he was sort of probably the last athlete like that.
Yep.
I don't think you can do that anymore.
Nope.
Mm.
Nope. But, I think. No, go ahead.
But no, I was going to say Kobe's not the, I mean, as interesting as Kobe on Twitter is, that's not even close to the most interesting thing going on Twitter lately.
What is that?
Twitter is reaching like a new level in society.
Absolutely it is.
We talked about this a little bit last week. Actually, all we talked about last week, real briefly, was just an acknowledgement of the Boston Marathon bombing.
Yeah.
What happened in the meantime was one of the craziest, like, 24 hours of not just social media, but media.
Ever.
And the intertwining relationship between social media, where you ended up with reporters on CNN, which used to be the gold standard for TV journalism.
Yeah.
Right? They were the, you know, MSNBC, they're more liberal. Fox News was more conservative. But CNN, man, CNN, those are the Gulf War people. Remember, they were the news, right? You got people on CNN, like, reading off of Twitter timelines, pure speculation.
Yep.
So,
you didn't even need to watch CNN during this whole ordeal.
No, to me,
you didn't need to turn your TV on.
The most effective way to find news was there were a couple places that were selectively following certain journalists, or more importantly, certain really local newspapers to the Boston area, who were then simply on their webpage in like a constantly refreshing feed, embedding tweets from the people who actually sort of knew what was going on.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, and it's stunning how quick news media and really journalists have taken to Twitter, although it sort of makes sense because it's a constant output for their desire to write, right? They can get instant feedback on ideas.
Yep.
But to me, this is the first big, like huge story like this that's taken place in this new era.
Yeah.
Fully.
Yep.
And to me, it's frightening in a good and a bad way how quickly Twitter has become sort of this language that news operates in now.
Yep.
What was your reaction to seeing all this?
I thought that it was incredible, you know, and this has happened with Christopher Dorner. It happened with I just saw his face and I forgot his name.
Who are you thinking?
In the past, or even the Sandy Hook shooting and the guy at the Aurora Theater, like all these instances, like within minutes they've got Facebooks and they've got Twitters and they've got tweets from 2009 and they've got, like, they're digging for all of your information. Google, you know, since Google stores everything that you do online, that's like your digital fingerprint. You know, people are able to take everything that you've done ever online and pretty much create a profile about you, and pretty much, you know, presume your guilt. It was really interesting how Twitter, the shootout between the two brothers and the cops, played out on via TwitPic and TwitVid. Like, you know, you saw the timeline where the guy was pretty much doing a timeline of, like, it was right above his window, and his roommates, like, his like one of his walls got shot up. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you see buckshots in his computer chair, and, like, that's crazy. that's the information that, that's the age that we live in now, where basically now criminals can sit back and they can look and they can say, all right, so this is where, so now somebody could have got on Twitter and said, there's somebody to the right of me taking pictures of me shooting out with the police. Let me go take care of that. That's crazy.
I mean, kind of, but I think what's really interesting about this whole thing is what people perceive as the democratization of news now. It used to be that reporting the news was the sole province of reporters, right? But reporters use the same tools that we all have in our pockets, cell phones.
Yeah.
They do everything. They take the pictures. They take videos. They're on Twitter just like we are, engaging with us. So then what you end up with is crazy stuff like, do you ever go on Reddit?
No, but I've heard a lot about it.
All right. So there was this massive Reddit, really subsection of the site that became devoted to people trying to become basically playing like private, like PI, like private investigator, like sifting through clues and trying to figure it out. Now, this would all be well and good if this were like the early 2000s and it was like a forum and it was sort of a niche thing. Reddit is a major deal. Major news places pay attention to Reddit, what happens on Reddit. What happens on Reddit gets tweeted and sort of bubbles up in that way. So you had sort of theories evolving out of this Reddit. It's called a subreddit, right? So out of the subreddit that were making their way first onto Twitter and then sort of like fringe news. And it, this sort of leveling of the playing field has implications in all sorts of ways, right? So in one direction, you've got all of a sudden you could tweet a crazy theory out. And if the right combination of people follows you, it could end up on CNN being some sort of, well, people are saying, and then they read the tweet.
Yeah.
Or on the flip side, because that's now the threshold, now reporters, they don't have to find facts anymore. They can say, well, yes, I'm hearing that.
Yes.
And so,
and that's the thing nowadays, that now the media is not driven to report the news. It almost came off like they were trying to like convey an ideology or convey you know, like they wanted to sway the public in one direction just based, like the news isn't supposed to report that. The news isn't supposed to say, well, I'm hearing this, or, you know, I think this is gonna, like, the news is not opinionated. The news is supposed to be fact. And if you're going off of unchecked tweets, because you're absolutely right, Twitter has eliminated the fact check. Nowadays, all you have to do, how many times have we been duped into, you know, the account is it's breaking news, but it's spelled like with two I's and we don't see it, and it says, you know, something horrible happened here, and immediately we retweet it, and then come to find out it's a parody account, or somebody just takes a screenshot of a real article, manipulates it, and puts it online about the guy who made Tyga dance to Rack City while he robbed him, or something like that. So now everybody believes that Tyga got robbed and had to dance to his own song while he got robbed.
I'm glad
as
you
opposed
brought
to like. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, just as opposed to really fact-checking and really seeking out, because anybody can say anything. There's no hierarchy now. Everything is a level playing field. And with the right retweet, you're a second away from being a news source. Lil' O U.
Yeah, I mean, you saw what happened with the Associated Press Twitter account this week,
and
right?
And that was scary. Yes.
So the Associated Twitter, the Associated Press AP Twitter account got hacked, and it was when I say hacked, what I mean is, so the way this happened is, the people who were trying to hack the Twitter account, they sent a phishing email to people at the AP, right? So it looked like a legit email. And as somebody who works in his day job in IT, I can tell you people get duped by these emails all the time, right? Where it like asks you to log in or to reply with your password or something. Can I just tell you something? If you're listening to this, there is no reason on earth why you would ever give a password up in an email. I don't care if it looks like it comes from the president of your company or it's some sort of important work password. You go walk down to his or her office and give it to themselves, right? Like, you never, ever, ever give out passwords in an email, right? And if you don't 100% know the link you're clicking on, never, ever, ever enter a password in the link that you just click on an email, right? But that's how they got it. They got somebody, they were able to, you know, it's called social engineering is what it is. It's social hacking, right? You're sort of pretending to be something you're not. Now you got access to the machine. You got access to this password. So they got access to the AP Twitter account, and they tweeted out that the White House had explosions and Barack Obama was injured.
And now the stock market thing, was that a real reaction, a real response?
It was, because here's what happened. Either this week or I think last week, relatively recently. So Bloomberg, which is not just the mayor of New York, but it's a financial company, right? They make all the consoles that the stock traders look at, right? Which displays like real-time stock info and all that stuff. They recently added, like on the side, Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So they can, so that they can, the idea is they can follow news organizations, like official governments, official Twitter accounts of companies, so that they can catch breaking news about companies, because companies now broadcast stuff on Twitter when something's going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So it wasn't just that people outside of Wall Street saw this fake thing and then somehow people on Wall Street heard of it. Like, they're getting this feed right into their like console that they work at every day.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got the AP Twitter account going in there, and yes, the stock market just started plummeting. If you look at the graph for the day, it's like a relatively solid line with a couple up and downs, and then whoop. Now, luckily, people quickly realized this was fake. Number one, nobody else at the White House was saying it was a problem. Number two, there were some things – people are actually fairly smart about this. There were some things in the way that they tweeted that wasn't representative. Like, and this – but what's scary is they're only going to get better at this. Like, for example, the AP would never tweet Barack Obama was injured. They would say President Obama was injured. Like, little things like that. So people picked up on that, and then the stock market quickly sort of came back up. But, you know, they might have thought it was a good idea to bring Twitter into the stock terminals. But this tells you how like high strung the market is.
Wow.
One tweet that of course got retweeted, but one tweet sent the stock market going for a couple minutes. Thankfully, it was
Wow.
Crazy.
That's crazy. That's scary.
So there's something called two-factor authentication, which if you're not a tech nerd, basically means not only do you enter your password, but you have to have some sort of physical device on you that like a message gets sent with another password. So like it's called two-factor because it's not just your password, it's this other thing that you have to authenticate and say, yep, I'm this person. The government started with this a while ago, and they had these, like, they were called like RSA encryption keys or whatever, these little like things that would auto-generate every like 30 or 60 seconds a new code. And when you logged in with your password, you had to then look at your little thing and grab the appropriate code for that 30 or 60 second time slot. That way they knew it was you and you were sitting there with your thing and it wasn't just somebody who stole your password, right? So, but they can do this now with phones. So Google has two-factor authentication. Apple has two-factor authentication now. And most importantly for this, Twitter is reportedly now looking into two-factor authentication, which is good because you would hope that the AP Twitter account wouldn't be as easy to get a password for as sending out us like an email that pretends to be from their help desk or whatever, right?
Right.
It's crazy, man. The power of Twitter. I mean, we talked about, you know, we had a, what we call Twitter's like cocaine and things we call the episode. I think we sort of were generically talking about social media, but there is something about Twitter, about the speed of it, about the way that it is. To me, it is a totally separate thing than Facebook. Like, people talk about social media like it's this generic thing, but to me, it's really not.
Not at all. It's not just Twitter. Not at all.
But no. What I'm saying is, like, I actually think Twitter is very unique. I think Facebook is very unique. I think stuff like Instagram is very unique. I think that they're used for different things. And Twitter, for whatever reason, and there's a lot of them actually, has become a standard and normal way to communicate. Like a professional, official way to do stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fascinating to watch. That's really, I guess, fascinating is the best word I could say, because in some ways it's great. Right? But, you know, the speed at which it evolves, I just don't know if some people are equipped to handle that and work with and react to that. You know, I don't think TV news is really great at reacting to this right now.
No. They're way too slow at this point. Mm-hmm. CNN's coverage of the whole Boston thing was a joke.
Was embarrassing.
It was a joke. And it was even funny to take it back to Kobe. Like, we talked about it, game one of Lakers Spurs, like Kobe tweeting was a thing.
Yeah, they would show that up on the screen during halftime. Like, here's what Kobe Bryant said. And I'm like, oh, my goodness.
Post.
Yeah. Well, okay. Like, is this really what's going on?
But see, do you think there's going to be a point where, like, now you're... Because we talked about it earlier, and you got... No, we called it Twitter. Yeah, Twitter is cocaine. If you don't have the episode, please go to clockradiospeakers.com and check it out. The episode was amazing. You know, we talked about how even though Twitter is a thing, it's a very targeted thing where only a certain demographic, a certain percentage of a certain demographic has it. Now, do you think that with these well-respected media outlets and these well-respected, now you're, you know, everybody you know has a Twitter, every sort of business is communicating using this medium. Is it going to be an instance, you think, where, you know, your mother's going to get a Twitter, your uncle's going to get a Twitter, your grandmother's going to get a Twitter, and you're going to have to be the one to help them figure out how this thing works like you did with Facebook 4 years ago?
What's interesting is it's moving so fast, but it's the sort of thing where Twitter is a thing where you can be a passive consumer of Twitter. You don't have to engage, right? You might see the hashtag on the bottom in the lower corner of a show and not use that hashtag, but you could go on the twitter.com/that hashtag, right? You can go search or whatever, and you can just follow along and see what people are saying.
Yep.
Right. So I suspect that with Facebook, you always had to make an account. There was always a barrier of entry.
Ah, gotcha.
With Twitter, there's number one, it's less because you don't have to make an account. You can just sort of browse. But not even that. The media has taken to sort of reporting what certain types of things are being tweeted, lowering the barrier of entry even more. Like, you could have never visited Twitter's website, but if you watched news over the past week and a half, you read tweets.
Absolutely.
Right? That never happened with Facebook. Facebook is really something completely different.
You're absolutely right. Good point. Great point.
And yeah.
Because you don't even have to, you know, you can still have the little purple bird as your background and is your default. You don't have to have any tweets.
If you have an egg for an icon, I'm not talking to you. You're not real.
Right. Right. Oh my God. Shout out to those people who pop up in my mentions. Shout out to the people who pop up in your mentions with like 3 followers and 6 tweets, and they're all to you and they're all negative.
People are getting good about this though. They'll make like a bunch of fake accounts, have them all follow each other.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it looks like, oh, maybe this person has like 50 followers. Maybe that, you know.
Yeah. You have way too much time on your hands if you're doing that. You need to go to sleep.
I think a lot of that's automated. That's what's scary. But, Twitter's got a lot of stuff going on. We got, we didn't talk about Twitter Music.
Yeah. I would love for you to break that down for me.
So Twitter Music is a brand new iOS application. It's iPhone and iPad only right now. And what it does is, in iOS, when you first set it up, you're like prompted if you want to connect both to Twitter and to Facebook. Like, those are just, you don't have to like log in to the apps. You log in like in the settings to Twitter and Facebook as like accounts that you have. And then every time another account wants to use those credentials to log in, then it just pops up and says, would you like to use your Facebook credentials to log in? And then it goes and you sort of do your thing. So Twitter Music did this, right? Obviously, it's from Twitter, but basically if you have Twitter, if you have a Twitter account and you're on your iPhone, then you install this app and it's like, do you want to use your Twitter account? What's weird about it is, I mean, I noticed this because I now have 4 Twitter accounts for various reasons, like work stuff and personal stuff and whatever, that I have on my iPhone. So it's like, which Twitter account do you want to use for Twitter Music? And so what it does is it's 4 different sections. I could probably pull it up right now and describe it as I'm going through. But so the first thing is what's trending, and this is what's really interesting to me is it's not perfect, right? So it's what's trending in terms of new music trending on Twitter, not just new music trending. So, because there's this whole other world outside of Twitter. I know it sounds crazy. I'll give you an example. So one of the most popular singles that got released that a bunch of people are talking about online is this new Daft Punk single, right?
Yep.
Daft Punk has a Twitter account, but they are not on Twitter ever. So nobody's using the @DaftPunk thing.
Oh.
So okay. Because of that, like I'm going through, I don't see, I'm up to like, I'm 30 artists deep and I don't see Daft Punk here at all. Whereas I see ASAP Ferg as number 30. Right.
ASAP Ferg, the which the new song, the Persian something that he just dropped the video for today.
Well, at least he is number 30 in terms of artists trending on Twitter.
Okay.
So what it does is it sort of gives you these like little like squares, of their Twitter, you know, icon, and it sort of goes through. And if you wanted to listen to that to something by that artist, you would click on it, and then. Separately, when you first open this app, it prompts you to log in either to Spotify or RDO if you have it. If you don't have either of those things, then you just get to hear like a 30-second snippet. But if you do have them, then you can just stream the whole song. But It's not like I clicked on Lil Wayne. It's not like it brings me to everything Lil Wayne's done. It streams whatever their latest single is, at least on Spotify or RDO.
Wow.
Now, here's that's an interesting problem. So if ASAP Ferg is trending and I click on ASAP Ferg, he has a song out today, which is why he's trending. But that's not the song that's linked to because it's not on Spotify yet. Instead, it wants to play Work.
Interesting.
Right.
So how are they going to connect that? Need to turn that song his song title into a trending topic?
Well, no, this is actually a Twitter problem, a Twitter music problem. What they need, the service they're missing, we talked about it last week a lot. It's my new favorite thing. The service they're missing is SoundCloud.
Mm-hmm.
When you put something on Spotify, it goes through sort of a process, much like getting a single on iTunes.
Right.
But artists themselves can put what they want on SoundCloud whenever they want.
Yeah.
So if an artist has a SoundCloud, and if you link this up with SoundCloud, then, you know, when I click on, again, I'll pick on, so like The Weeknd, he's number 26. He's always trending. I don't know why.
People still like The Weeknd.
People like The Weeknd. You know, maybe right now they want me to hear The Morning, right? But whenever his new single drops online, whenever a link drops, and if he's trending even higher, it's still going to say The Morning until that single eventually makes its way to Spotify and RDO.
Right.
So there's a delay there, which, of course, is the exact opposite of what this is meant to be.
Yeah.
So, but this is definitely an interesting idea, right? So Popular, which is new music is trending on Twitter, is the first screen. The second screen, I have no idea where they're coming up with this, is labeled Emerging, which is meant to be like artists you don't know about. And you'd think that would be a great opportunity for people, but this looks to have a real serious, like, I'm just going to say, a lot of white people on this list. Like, I'm not seeing too many hip-hop artists, black or white, in this list. There's a lot of indie rockers. There's a lot of electronica.
A lot of EDM, right?
Yeah. Papoose, 77, under Emerging. Right? I mean, so there's clearly some...
The jokes write themselves!
He's Emerging. 10 years later.
Out of all of the upcoming hip hop artists, what happens when you click on Papoose? What song plays? Bucket Naked?
Hold on. I need to go down. Now you got me excited. What's My Name?
Okay.
At least it's the right song, right?
Yeah, I think that's his thing. I think the only one I saw was he had a video for Alphabetical Slaughter 2. You know, the song where he's rapping in reverse and the beat's in reverse. Get it?
We talked about this at length. If you want to hear us completely slander Papoose for like an hour and a half, maybe longer, clockreadyspeakers.com.
And he had the video with like Kim Kardashian, the little Jay-Z, like the little kids and stuff. I didn't know that What's My Name was the single, but okay, at least it's the right song.
All right. So all right. The next screen is Suggested, which is the artist that you might like.
Okay.
Which is interesting for me because I have multiple Twitter accounts. So I started testing this out to see where it was most accurate. Let me just say, it thinks I have terrible taste in hip-hop. Number one, Young Berg.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I saw you Instagram that.
It thinks I like Young Berg. Let's see, this first screen, Roscoe Dash, Tony Yayo, Nelly, Birdman, Plies, Chingy. What? What is Twitter trying to tell me about my music choices? Exactly. And then the last one is artists. Wait, this is. Hold on. Oh, they changed this. I think it used to be artists you follow. But now it's the one of the last ones is the hashtag now playing. So if okay. there are people you follow who have been tweeting with the hashtag now playing, the artist that they're playing will show up on the screen.
Okay.
So for me, it's fun, oddly enough, nobody really uses the hashtag now playing on my timeline, except for me. So for me, I see a Schoolboy Q song and an ASAP song.
Okay.
So it's an interesting app for discovery. This is it's not an app that is meant to like replace Spotify or replace iTunes or Google Play. It's not meant to even replace anything like SoundCloud or, you know, heck, I mean, people use YouTube to listen to music. What it's sort of meant to do, I think, is it's sort of trying to solve the problem of, all right, I'm on Twitter, I have a Twitter account, and I hear about artists and I don't know where to start. Or I want to know what's popular right now. Now, for you and I, that's not really a problem we need to solve.
Right.
But it's really interesting because, like, people see this and, you know, I'm trying to think. Like, right now, you know, Sierra is number 5 on this popular thing because of the video for Body Party's out today, right?
Yeah.
And good for her, right? Because that's actually what's linked to. So that's great for her.
Yeah.
Right? And you can immediately jump to her profile. You can follow her immediately from there. What's really fun is then you can sort of – it sort of like keeps going down. So now you can see all the artists that she follows or whoever follows, and then you can go listen to stuff that they do and you can keep going down.
Huh.
It's a really – it's an interesting idea. But again, I think the problem is they're relying on services that are sort of meant to be like official music, whereas, you know, to me, Twitter – I mean, artists tweet out stuff all the time.
Right.
Like, if you're not on Spotify, then how are you going to get – like, let's say you trend, but you're not on Spotify yet. Like, how does that even work?
Right. So does it? Is it a thing where it's a thing where Twitter is actually integrated into Spotify to yeah. where, you know, now playing?
Yeah, it will, and then it'll link.
DMX, what's my name?
And it'll link back to. Yeah, that's right. So, like, if I what they're trying to get you to do is like as you're playing this, to as you like listen. So if I listen to Sierra song. Then it wants me to tweet about it. And if I tweet about it, it's actually linking to, I think, the Spotify link.
Okay. Okay.
It's well, an interesting
that's a good idea, yeah.
It's an interesting idea. I'm not... Again, for me, the problem, and this is just a problem I have... Look, I love Spotify. I pay for it. It's the problem I have with Spotify in general, which is Spotify is just trying to be a streaming iTunes. And that's not really where music is headed. Right? Artists release music on their own. Music gets released faster. Like... I'd like to see if they're with this, I'd like to see them figure out how to get music into the ways. Never mind. Like if something is, I mean, here's what's really, what they're sort of missing out of this Twitter music is how important YouTube is to music. Right.
Right.
If somebody's trending because they've got something on YouTube and the thing that the Twitter music app gets you is only the Spotify stream of that particular song, well, you're sort of missing why it's trending.
Right.
But I think they could go somewhere with this. I do. They're attacking the problem of music discovery in a way that I've never seen anybody do. It's not perfect, but it's something totally different.
Absolutely, and it, to me, it sounds like it's a good start.
Yeah. It's a very interesting start. We got anything? I'm trying to think. Is there anything else you want to talk about, man?
No, not really.
We got a couple music things we can talk about, but you know, we're like 2 hours in, so I think this might be.
Yeah, I think we dropped enough jewels for one episode. This episode was very heavy, really heavy, but it was amazing. So, thank you guys for listening and hanging out with us.
And as usual, please visit thisiskairos.com.
thisiskairos.com. Yes, sir. Pre-order the album. Get Amy Winehouse as a bonus track. That song will not be available after May 21st, and it's definitely not the only reason why Amy Winehouse. Is a bonus track is just because of time constraints. It's not how normal bonus tracks are where we just kind of like, this song's kind of cool. No. Like every song that we release that is relative to Kairos is essential listening. So I highly suggest that you not wait and that you just pre-order the album. On top of that, when you pre-order the album, you're going to get it before May 21st anyway. So there's a lot of benefits to go ahead and paying for it now as opposed to waiting another 3.5 weeks, month or so.
Yeah. And yeah, so what are the good people going to hear this Sunday on the Post Radio?
I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure I'm going to play Letter to Lecrae.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I'll play. Maybe I'll play some Kendrick. Maybe I'll just play some Christian hip hop. Maybe I'll do that. I don't know. I gotta think about it. I gotta listen back to the episode and see where my inspiration leads me.
But so we'll see. I guess that's it. So again, appreciate everybody listening. Go check out all our past episodes, clackradiospeakers.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Follow us both on Twitter. Do not follow us on the Instagrammer.
Do it.
I think that's about it. So we'll see y'all next week.